Welcome to Maritime Magazine. I'm Christina Harnett. Pauline Dakin is away this week.
Требуется время, чтобы говорить язык.
If you live in Nova Scotia, you may have seen this ad. It's been running on TV all month.
Почему же обед лактями? No.
It shows a young woman in a cafe speaking in what's clearly not her first language. And the subtitles along the bottom say, it takes time to learn a new language. Why would breastfeeding be any different?
Почему же кормление грудью должно чем-то отличаться?
Now, the ad is part of a campaign sponsored by the Nova Scotia government. And the tagline at the end reads, breastfeeding, learning makes it natural. The point is this. In Nova Scotia, in fact, across Atlantic Canada, breastfeeding rates are very low. And the people who work in health promotion would like them to be higher. But as with everything that has to do with childbirth and infants, it's just not as simple as it seems. Reporter Leslie Lowe is here to talk about it. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Christina.
So you have been looking into this campaign, or I guess that was kind of your jumping off point. What have you found out?
A lot, and a lot about how women think about breastfeeding. And first off, most women know, as the saying goes, you've heard it, I've heard it, breast is best. And most women plan to nurse their babies.
Before you had him, did you plan to nurse?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I knew as soon as I got pregnant that this would be in my plans for sure. Just kind of seemed like a no-brainer to me.
I don't know that I gave it a lot of thought. I guess I always assumed once I knew I wanted children and would be getting pregnant, I assumed I would breastfeed just because that seems to be the trend these days. And I suppose also because I'm cheap and it's free. So why not?
But there are a lot of things that can get in the way of seeing that intention through.
Okay, so before we get to that, just how low are those breastfeeding rates here?
Low. In Nova Scotia, about 75% of women initiate nursing, so that means any attempt to bring the baby to the breast. After 4 months, only 36% of those women are still nursing. So say 100 women have babies in Nova Scotia, 75 make some attempt to nurse, and after 4 months, only 27 of those women are still at it. By 6 months, which is the time both the World Health Organization and Health Canada say babies should be exclusively breastfed, fewer than 10 of those women are still at it.
Wow. So yeah. This new marketing campaign wants to change that, obviously.
Yeah. Now, the tagline for the campaign, as you said, is learning makes it natural. So the message is this. Breastfeeding is a learning process for the mom and for the baby. It's about education and figuring it out. And that figuring it out can last a while. The website for the new campaign is firstsixweeks.ca because, you know, there's no magic moment that you get breastfeeding. But women can often find their stride at around 6 weeks. And that early learning period can be, well, let's face it, it can be brutal.
Yeah, but at the same time right now, I can hear some women in the audience going, well, I didn't have any problems. What are you talking about? It was easy. But, you know, how bad can it get for some women?
Well, here's Sarah Thompson. Now, Sarah has a one-year-old, Ryan. She's still nursing him, but she had a difficult time getting to where she is.
Ryan and I had a really rough time getting breastfeeding going. I had a low milk supply and had to continually pump to be able to build that up, and it took about 3.5 months before he could breastfeed well enough to be on his own without supplements.
So Sarah started supplementing with bottled breast milk because her milk supply was low, and that means she was nursing Ryan 12, 15 times a day at the very early stages. And then Sarah was pumping milk in between feedings, 8, sometimes 10 times a day.
And doing nothing else, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that would take your whole day. Wow.
Yeah. So a public health nurse eventually set Sarah up with a feeding tube. So she would have a tube running over her shoulder, leading from a bottle of breast milk to her breast and into Ryan's mouth. She was also taking herbal supplements, and she was on medication, and at one point, popping 48 pills a day.
Unbelievable. And yet we still have this iconic view of breastfeeding being so easy and so natural.
Yeah, and it's not in so many cases. And that's the thrust of the campaign, to help women be better prepared for what it can be like. And like, that makes sense, right? It's not like anyone waltzes into childbirth thinking, push, pop, thanks for the baby, see you later. women go into childbirth, I think, generally prepared for a real challenge.
So the idea is that if they're prepared for breastfeeding to be difficult, that they might stick with it, or I guess that they might stick with it longer.
Yeah, that's the idea. And I'm glad you mentioned nursing longer, because they want women to carry on nursing, and that's called duration. So here's Marianne Brophy. Marianne is co-chair of the Breastfeeding Committee for Canada, which is associated with the World Health Organization and UNICEF. She was here earlier this month for a breastfeeding training session aimed at healthcare workers.
As we know that the benefits of breastfeeding are dose-dependent and also dependent on exclusive breastfeeding from birth to about 6 months. So World Health makes that recommendation of exclusivity, Health Canada makes that recommendation, but when we look at duration rates across the world, across the country, and in Nova Scotia, we see that many mothers have introduced something other than breast milk, even within the first 2 weeks.
So Marianne grew up in Tanzania, where she says most mothers just breastfeed their babies as a matter of course.
Well, what are the rates like in some other places?
So British Columbia, for example, has the highest Canadian initiation rate at 95%.
So that's the number of women attempting breastfeeding,
that's
starting
right.
off.
Yep. But they have a drop-off, too, that they're working on. It's not as bad as in Eastern Canada, though. Some of the highest breastfeeding rates in the world are in Northern Europe. So in Sweden and Norway, for example, 98% of women initiate breastfeeding. And at 6 months, exclusive breastfeeding hovers around 50%.
Wow. So why is it so different here?
Well, you know what? It's just not the culture here, or it hasn't been for a long time. 50, 60 years ago, formula feeding was the norm and breastfeeding fell by the wayside. And there's even a term for it.
One term that we hear a lot, which is the lost generation. And a lot of moms today weren't breastfed by their parents, and that was and their grandparents as well. So when companies started producing milk formula substitutes or breast milk substitutes, there was a big marketing campaign that went along with that. So there was a big push for that when our grandmothers and mothers were having children. So a lot of the support that we talk about that's really critical to establishing breastfeeding, that comes from friends and families and community support. So we've lost some of that information.
So that was Laura Brennan, and she's the coordinator for early child nutrition at the Department of Health Promotion and Protection.
That idea of a lost generation is really interesting, but it's not as simple as history, is it?
No, it goes far, far deeper. And here's Marianne Brophy again.
We see subtle messages and different ways. Breastfeeding moms are often shown in the blues and depressing colors. Messaging is often looking at the sore nipples and creating doubt in a woman's mind that she has a sufficient supply. On the other hand, it's out there looking at the commodification of breast milk by saying that formula has all these wonderful additives, which in the public's eye create an equivalence between breast milk and formula. And that does breastfeeding the added disservice that women think that it's all about breast milk and it's not about breastfeeding. So we know that feeding babies breast milk with a bottle is not at all the same as breastfeeding. The other piece that's in there that is of real concern and is addressed internationally through the International Labour Organization is the lack of supports for women who want to return to the workplace. Women often feel that breastfeeding is to blame for the barriers they face when they enter motherhood. And really, it is about gender inequity and the subtle barriers that are not as overt as they used to be, but that are definitely out there. So what Nova Scotia has done really well is they are working with employers to look at how to put in supports for women who may visit their business, but also for their staff who may still be breastfeeding.
So Marianne Brophy really gets at the breadth and the depth there, and she shows that raising breastfeeding rates is about cultural change. And that's why the people working on the campaign in Nova Scotia aren't focusing only on the technical aspects, so the simple early-on techniques for helping women and babies learn to breastfeed. They're talking about making breastfeeding a cultural norm and making women feel supported in choosing to do it.
Can you talk more about that support idea?
Yeah. I went over to Dalhousie University here in Halifax to ask Françoise Baylis about it. Now, Françoise is a Canada research chair in bioethics and philosophy, and I wanted to ask her what governments and societies can reasonably be expected to do to help support women and to support women who choose to breastfeed?
Are there private rooms in public buildings such that a woman could go into a private area and nurse her infant? If there are not, for whatever reasons, such facilities, do we expect a woman to go into the bathroom and sit on a toilet as a pleasant place to nurse her child? I mean, I think that's, clearly not going to be an environment that's conducive to encouraging someone to breastfeed. Beyond that, if the woman is comfortable bearing her breast in public, is she going to be shunned? Is she going to be spoken to in ways that are rude, etc.? That's not going to encourage somebody to respond. Now, I think a number of women are going to say, look, my baby's hungry, I'm going to feed them and, be damned what other people think. But that's not everybody. And so I think what you need to recognize is you've got a variety of people with a variety of ways of interacting publicly. And that if you're going to meaningfully support them in pursuing, healthy behaviors, you need to provide appropriate resources. And then I think the examples I've given show you that it's not just a formal support, such as having a private room. It's a social support such that people would advocate on behalf of pregnant women, even if they're not pregnant women, even if they don't know pregnant women, but they would see that as a worthwhile expenditure.
So Françoise Bayle says, governments can encourage all they want, but nothing's going to change unless work is done on the ground and women can see and feel that support.
So I wanted to ask you then about breastfeeding support from public health caregivers, because we heard about Sarah Thompson and her situation. I mean, how common is that story? Do many women need that kind of help?
Well, I met another mom for this piece, and her name's Kathy Ann Rainforth. Kathy Ann is a new mom, and here's how the last 10 or so weeks of her life have looked.
He wouldn't latch until 4 weeks. We tried everything in the book. I finger-fed colostrum in the hospital, and he was exclusively bottle-fed for the first month. And then overnight, he decided to latch at 4 weeks, and he's been breastfeeding since. So we tried everything. Those first 4 weeks, public health nurses were here pretty much twice a week, and without them, we wouldn't be breastfeeding today.
Everything's fine for Kathy Ann now, and she was nursing Jack while I was interviewing her, but it took a long haul to get her there.
I mean, I can't believe the baby was able to start breastfeeding essentially at 4 weeks in. That's amazing. But did she know any of this was going to happen? Was she prepared for it?
Yeah. Just like Sarah Thompson, she did.
What were you told about nursing? Do you remember?
That it can be quite hard for some moms. It doesn't just happen overnight for everyone, and it does take time for both of us to learn how to do it. Yeah.
So you can hear that message.
Yeah, I hear Jack's message.
Yeah. We hear her patting him.
But what you're saying here is that message is getting through. It's no accident.
Yeah, that's the campaign in a nutshell. And here's Michelle Amaro. Michelle's the Healthy Eating Coordinator for Health Promotion and Protection.
This is definitely a shift for us in terms of acknowledging the challenges. And not for a second did we ever not acknowledge the challenges, but traditionally breastfeeding messages have been, breastfeeding is best for your baby, here are the benefits. And that's often, in terms of general messaging, where it might have ended. And so what we're saying now is breastfeeding is best for your baby, here are the multiple benefits, and it may take time to learn. Make sure that you get the supports that you need to do that.
You are listening to Maritime Magazine on CBC Radio 1. I'm Christina Harnett, and I'm sitting in today for Pauline Dakin, and I'm here with Leslie Lowe. We're talking about breastfeeding. And Leslie, I feel like maybe we should just stop for a second and back up a step, because everything we're talking about this morning is based on that idea that breast is best.
Yeah.
But why is that? I mean, what is it that we know that tells us that?
The detailed answer is that breastfed babies are less likely to develop asthma. They're less likely to develop some allergies and some gastrointestinal illnesses. They're also less likely to be readmitted to hospital. Now, studies seem to show that breastfed babies have higher IQs over the long term, too. And for women, that's sort of forgotten sometimes, that there are benefits for mom, too. There's an association between breastfeeding and reduced rates of certain kinds of cancer. Breastfeeding helps the uterus contract, helps women return to their pre-pregnancy weight faster. For both mom and baby, it's very important for attachment and bonding. But the missing piece, according to Michelle Amaro, is this.
If you look at the impact at society as a whole in terms of, environmental consciousness, for example, in terms of, not having a lot of waste in terms of when you're breastfeeding, you just have mom and baby. There's no other things that need to be thrown out as a result of that. And so there is a significant impact at a community level. And we're hoping that as we shift breastfeeding to that cultural norm, people will see that even if you're not a breastfeeding mom, that there is a benefit to have women breastfeed, even if you are far removed from that life stage, that there is a benefit in general to society to have women breastfeeding from multiple levels.
Yeah. But, that idea of good for society,
yeah.
I mean, it could put a lot of pressure on women who are making what's really, I mean, when you come right down to it, it's an individual choice,
yep.
Based on the context of your own life.
Absolutely. There's so much tied up in breastfeeding, so much. And who wants to feel like they're failing society?
We don't put enough pressure on ourselves.
Yeah. You know what? I want you to hear a story from another mom, Leslie Hunter. And this is Leslie describing the feeling of not being successful nursing her first child.
It was this whole questioning because of, number one, my postpartum thinking, what have I done having this child? And then secondly, to be failing at it so miserably in sustaining another human life. It was like, really, what have I done?
You know what? I'm going to say many moms, with or without nursing problems, know that feeling of having that first baby and thinking, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? Not that you're not happy, but it's overwhelming. In Leslie's case, that was extreme.
Why? What's her story?
Well, Leslie's baby was latching beautifully in the hospital, she says. When she got home, he wasn't getting enough to eat, and for whatever reason, both her breasts became infected. She was diagnosed with mastitis. At one point, she was rushed to the hospital by ambulance because of the infection.
Wow.
All that time, all that while, she continued to try to nurse, and she hung on for 6 weeks.
And then she stopped after that?
Yeah, but not without what she felt was a fight, because her public health nurse, and she says many of the people in her support network, just said, keep trying, keep trying, keep trying.
And as long as I said I would keep trying, that there was the potential for success. What I didn't know was that there were other ways that it was... It was more working with my own mind, and I had to give myself a break. And there was no one around me at the time to say, it's okay not to do this, and because I really wanted to.
Can you remember when you made the decision? Was there a moment where it was like, okay, now I know what I'm going to do? And how did you feel?
It was horrible. There was no relief. There was no joy. There was no bliss in it. I was alone in the decision, and it was after a night of feeding every 1.5 hours, and both breasts were extremely infected. It was after I had returned home from 2 days in the hospital after being diagnosed with mastitis, was rushed to the hospital in an ambulance with a fever of 104. Finally came back another night at home. Baby was feeding. And he kept, would feed a little and then throw up blood and then feed a little more and then throw it up because he couldn't digest it. And finally, the next morning, I said, I'm just going to give him a bottle. And I remember the look in my partner's eyes, and he was relieved for me because he couldn't make the decision for me. But I was not relieved. I felt like I was alone.
Wow.
Yeah. So... here we are. This is the elephant in the nursery here. Many of us have heard these stories of moms who have felt pressured to keep on nursing when they were just past the point that they felt they ought to have switched to a breast milk substitute.
Right. So maybe the message gets a little overzealous in some cases.
Sure. And it's important, I think, to recognize the weight of the words, especially of healthcare providers, because for many women, many first-time moms, and this ties into that lost generation idea, the healthcare providers are the experts, and they can have significant impact on women's feelings, as you'll hear from this mom, Sarah.
I distinctly remember, sitting in my darkened bedroom, hooked up to this machine with a crying baby, trying to juggle him and pump, and having this woman's words in my head, and just crying because this was not the experience I wanted and she was not helpful. And
she saw no leeway for, you know, okay, maybe we've given it the try, we've done what we could, it's not working for whatever reason, let's move on to something else. There was just, it was not an option in her mind. And actually, eventually, I had to stop taking her phone calls and forcefully tell her to close my file because I didn't want to hear from her anymore. And then I could make my own informed decisions after that point.
So this is a case where the relationship between the mom and her public health caregiver broke down, you know, severely.
Mm-hmm.
And remember Sarah Thompson, the first mom we heard from?
Right, the mother who was taking all the pills and had success with the feeding tube.
Right, different Sarah. Similar situation, completely different reaction.
She was offering me all these, what I thought were crazy ways to go about dealing with the lack of latching, you know, in terms of pumping and then having this little tube. I tried it. It was a little over the top for me. But some people I've heard respond well to that, and they're glad to have the options and glad to have the input. So it's not that all public health nurses are sending the wrong message. It's just not communicating that well and not reading the cues that, you know, I had tried and I had reached my breaking point.
So Sarah felt her emotional health was being taxed and that her bond with her baby was actually being compromised because of the stress of breastfeeding not working. And she didn't feel like that was part of the equation, really.
So how did she feel about stopping?
Mixed.
On a rational level, I didn't accept everything she was saying. I knew that there are people who don't breastfeed their babies for very long, and those babies are fine. I mean, most of the people in my generation were not breastfed, or if they were, it wasn't for very long, and we've turned out okay. And so far, my six-year-old seems to be doing just fine, having only had 3 to 4 months of breast milk. So I knew on a rational level that I was making the right decision, but it didn't stop the negative impact of what she'd already said to me.
So, Leslie, that's Sarah, who stopped breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you something? The province's new emphasis then in the breastfeeding campaign is about telling women that, yes, breastfeeding can be very difficult and that it can take longer than you might think to get comfortable with it.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So couldn't that then leave some women feeling more pressure? Because the new party line is, look, this is admittedly very, very difficult, and it often takes sticking with it to make it work.
You know what? I don't think so. And here's why. What seems to be different between then and now is a realization that it doesn't do anyone any good to be coerced or bullied. And I don't want to imply in any way that bullying has ever been policy. But it struck me when I was interviewing for this piece that not one of the health professionals I spoke to, when I asked them the ultimate goal of the campaign, said, raise the rates no matter what.
But, I mean, obviously that has to be the point. Not that it's a bad goal to have.
Yeah. Well, that's where the rubber hits the road, right? Getting more babies on breasts for longer. But here's Marianne Brophy again.
And we know from the research that one positive conversation prenatally can make or break a mom's intention to breastfeed. One conversation is worth more than a whole forest of trees cut down and turned into pamphlets. So we know that if we can hear where the mom is coming from and honor her experience, life experience and commitment, and hear her concerns and help her know that there are folks out there who do listen and who care and will support her, that can have a strong impact on her commitment to breastfeeding.
So Marianne Brophy is saying there's something crucial in that relationship between moms and healthcare providers. And if you think about it, that was the real problem for Leslie and Sarah, the last two moms we heard from. You know, they could live with the choice not to nurse, however wrenching that choice was for them to make. But the struggle lay in feeling like the end goal, breastfeed, was given priority over the mom's experiences and her changing goals.
Yeah. So do you think it still happens then?
I mean, there's got to be personality conflicts, right? And I mean, of course there are. Here's what Kathy Inkpen says. Kathy is manager of healthy development with the Department of Health Promotion and Protection.
So I think we're coming to a time, I mean, I think a few years ago there was a lot of oh, there are a lot of people sort of felt maybe that it was being, you know, breastfeeding is being pushed at us, and it's, you know, those, I'm really hoping we're not hearing as much of that. And I think it was in a well-meaning way, and that people were probably excited from a healthcare provider perspective and wanted to get that across, but in sometimes maybe not in a way that was most helpful for families. So I think it's really about having those conversations, doing it early, giving women food for thought and their partners, and then being there to answer questions and work them through what may be coming.
So, Christina, you said surely raising the rates is the point. Mm-hmm. And well, yeah, of course it is. But I think there's an interesting twist at play.
What's that?
It's the idea that raising the rates of breastfeeding is tied to how well breastfeeding moms are treated. And sometimes that can mean supporting the informed choice not to breastfeed. So, for example, whether you breastfeed or not, a big priority at the IWK is skin-to-skin contact between moms and babies.
Right. This idea that even if you use a bottle, it's important that you and the baby get cuddled up skin to skin. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's for bonding. And early on, it actually helps colonize the baby with helpful bacteria from the mom's skin.
I did not know
that.
Isn't that
cool?
That's cool. Yeah. But when we talk about this relationship building between nurses and parents, it's the idea that if people don't have their guards up because they think they're being bullied or pressured, that then they might actually be more open to the process.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that may foster the cultural change we're talking about in getting more women nursing for longer and making breastfeeding more our cultural norm. Dalhousie's Françoise Bayla says fostering deep, slow cultural change is one of the ways of making sure the change sticks. She cites smoking as a really good example. So, instant legislation and government marketing campaigns hasn't made smoking less prevalent, at least not alone, she argues. But the groundswell of evidence against smoking, and crucially, the way we look at it, has made the change stick.
Sure, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And making breastfeeding the norm ties into an even bigger picture, which you've heard Marianne Brophy mention, recognizing the broader societal benefits of breastfeeding and helping place a higher value on what mothers do.
Talk about cultural change. There's one right there.
I know.
Placing a higher value on the work of mothers.
Right. But Françoise Bayless, who nursed her own children, argues that part of that is recognizing the value of mothers by respecting their informed, reasonable choices too.
Individually and as a society, we have a range of values. Some of them at different times are in competition. We have to make choices. And that's, in fact, what happens in this context. So, you know, I think what's really important is, do women and their partners have access to good information? Can they take that information and look around and see that there are social supports behind the information that they're being given? And those are both formal and informal. And then with that, can they make a choice that they're prepared to accept the consequences of? It's a difficult thing only because they won't only bear them alone. Their children will bear some of the consequences. And that's the context in which there seems to be, you know, a lot of drive and energy to sort of say, let's make sure that they had full information because the trade-offs are there.
So lots to think about there.
Well, you know, I can't help but think it's interesting that the way we approach food, and this is a food after all, is also going through a big cultural shift right now.
Oh, for sure. You know what? Here's early childhood nutrition coordinator Laura Brennan again.
Not only are we trying to create breastfeeding as the cultural norm, but it's a whole cultural shift because we've really moved so far into the world of convenience and instant satisfaction and gratification. And this does take time. It forces you to slow down. It is absolutely the slowest food, I think, that you could find, right?
I love that analogy, that it's the original slow food.
That's great. Yeah. So here we are. The campaign started at the beginning of the month. What else are we going to see? I mean, how will they measure success here?
Well, you know, we started talking today about 50, 60 years ago. So, of course, the Department of Health Promotion and Protection and everybody else with a stake in this campaign, and I'm going to say society in general wants to see higher breastfeeding rates, but I think we have to remember what Françoise Bayla said about change that sticks and to understand the meaning of the campaign is way bigger than simple numbers.
Very interesting. Thank you. Thanks, Leslie. This is really interesting. Thank
you, Christina.
Leslie Lowe is a freelance reporter based in Halifax, and I am willing to bet that there are mothers and fathers out there with stories to tell about your own experiences feeding a newborn, and we would love to hear from you. The answering machine is 1-800-565-5463. That's 1-800-565-5463. Or you can send us an email to marmag@cbc.ca.
I'm Christina Harnett. Next week on the show, we go to Sussex, New Brunswick, where new big box stores are popping up and new homes are being built and businesses are booming. But despite all the prosperity, some residents have been left high and dry, literally. That's next Sunday. Until then, for me and Pauline Dakin, thanks for listening and have a great week.